Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan present Point Taken, a podcast connecting you to the sports and pop culture issues you care about and the guests you want to hear more from. Now, here's Carolyn Cameron and Greg Brady.
Hey, everybody. Yes, welcome to Point Taken. It's the most wonderful time of the year, some might argue, for sports. October, a time when Greg has to stay up even later and struggle through the podcast.
I wanted to bawl like a baby when my alarm went off this morning. You don't even need an alarm, do you?
Yes, I do. I went to bed at 4. So we're recording this on, what day is this?
I woke up at
Thursday.
4.
So I was up late because of the World Series game 2.
And Raptors
and
Golden
the Raptors
State.
Game. So yeah, we were at work till about 3 a.m.
Yeah,
to
but
get
you
all
don't you don't need a mid afternoon alarm to make sure you're in here by supper time.
No.
Early evening.
No, I just need an alarm to make sure I don't sleep all day. Don't you worry about me. I'll be.
But you're right.
It's
rough. It was extra inning baseball. There were all these extra innings. I mean, raise your hand if you didn't hit an extra inning home run in the Dodgers Astros game 2 last night. Plus, Raptors Golden State could have easily gone to overtime. Like, overtime in basketball is you got a commitment of about another 15 minutes. It's not like baseball.
No,
it could go another hour.
No.
But you got at least a commitment of another 15, 16 minutes.
Lakers went to overtime. Lakers-Wizards,
right.
The ball versus wall.
That's right. To play.
You showed LeVar way too many times.
I know you're
on
mellowing on LeVar. No, you're not. I feel the energy, negative energy coming
it?
About
yeah.
LeVar.
It's accurate.
I wonder how this will sound because we're in a brand new studio.
It is
we're
very,
happy.
Very nice.
I mean,
this is luxurious. I wish everybody at home could see this.
We could take a couple pictures. We could post
pictures. It's very hygienic, and I know that you'd think, why are you saying that? I would hope that for any space, but it's just so new. The mics don't smell. There's no dust. No dust on the table. It's
and
very
I
nice.
I feel like most of your Instagram is Instagram stories. Do you actually take still photos anymore?
I
or are
do.
They all?
I don't think I take
little
as many
okay. video
when
vignettes.
We leave here,
I don't know.
I'll take my phone's charging. I'll do a story.
or a series of still photos. I still have not figured out how to do it. I don't.
I'll show you.
Okay.
I don't know.
It can't
know
be
if
that
it's
difficult.
That necessary.
And
but.
I don't know if I will do a daily one of. Because you're constantly trying. My God, I was going to mention you were at UWO for homecoming.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. We haven't even talked about that.
You took a picture in front of University College.
Yeah. Had to avoid. It's like you're just trying to avoid all the goose droppings.
I saw those geese. I've never seen geese before on campus.
What?
I feel like that's a 21st century.
No.
They were gone by 1996.
They're all over the place. We should look that up. Maybe the population of geese is increasing.
It's not like I have wild turkeys near my house I worry about
really?
This time of year that walk past the house down a sidewalk and into the woods. Where
At least
we live
they
right
walk
by
on the
woods.
Sidewalk.
They're not on the road. did you go to the football game? Where did you?
I did.
Like
I went
London
to the,
stories.
Oh, it was great. Yeah, so I went to the football game. After that, there was a tailgate in the parking lot. I was surprised. You can't drink beer in the stands, which you have to drink in a beer garden.
Of course not.
Really?
The irresponsibility of the average college student.
This isn't what I signed up for.
But you weren't allowed when you went to school. They haven't liberalized it that much. It's
okay,
dangerous.
Fine. When I was a kid.
What if someone didn't like the offensive play calling and threw cups of beer instead of cups of Coke Zero and bottled water on the field?
Okay,
you can't
whatever.
Have that.
Anyway, I did that walk through campus. I stopped by the Spoke, which is the student restaurant, and my all-time favorite Rick McGee was playing. Rick McGee is just he is a legend.
Did you know I DJed at the Spoke?
No.
You did not know that?
You were
I
a
did.
DJ?
I did. Yes, I played on 80s night was Monday and New Wave Alternative was Tuesday.
Wow.
So it's perfect for I didn't do the
New
90s
Wave
night.
New Wave Alternative doesn't have a good ring to it. It doesn't really, you know what I mean, in terms of trying to sell it.
I think it's
Hey, buddy, come out for
There were Britpop nights I would fill in for. Mm. That was very mid-90s sort of like Oasis, Coldplay.
Did you have a DJ
Blur.
Name?
No, I really didn't get on the mic that much. I've gotten more used to speaking. Although I don't know if you're like this. When you MC something, TV is easy. I think it comes naturally for you. I think radio does for me. But I get nervous in front of people staring at me. You're like, doesn't matter that you could have as many tens of thousands of people watching me or listening to me, but I get nervous with live people in a room. You do, eh?
Same. I get very nervous. I've tried to do more MCing gigs, so I get less nervous, but I get nervous. It's just different. Then once you get started, it's fine, but Yeah, I'm just, it's different. And people think it's the same. It's not the same.
It's not the same.
And I'm working in a studio with no one around.
Well, and I don't know what my biggest fear is, that somebody walks out, somebody heckles me, somebody throws something. I don't know what my...
All of the above. I think more just me screwing up, but...
Now, you said, well, that would never happen. You said
it happens.
Baseball last night. I had a tough time right away because I... This is very sacrilegious in Toronto, and this sounds like I'm playing what we'd call a troll in the in an ALS in a city like Toronto with the AL East rivalries. I really wanted the Yankees to win. I really wanted the Yankees to get there. I couldn't get enough of Aaron Judge. I wanted more Aaron Judge, more Gary Sanchez. I wanted CC Sabathia on the mound. I like Joe Girardi, who we just found out today is not coming back to the Yankees. Does that? But I feel like that makes someone really bad in Toronto. I'm not saying about the Red Sox, but I. This is the Yankees team I've really enjoyed, and Aaron Judge, you can't make that up. I love the passion of the fans. I would have much rather the Yankees got there than Boston, and it took me a while to get into this concept of Dodgers Astros. But I think we've had two pretty good games. You would have done the highlights for Game 2 last night, and that's almost like a modern day World Series classic. It had everything.
I was also hoping for Yankees Dodgers, just because I think too there's something to be said for the two biggest markets going at it and the storylines, especially with Judge. But I have to say, the Astros and Jose Altuve, they're a likable team, and Justin Verlander, too. I mean, to think, we all thought going into the game that the storyline was going to be Justin Verlander in Game 2, and it wasn't. And, it was just one of the best baseball games I've seen in recent memory, because it was just ridiculous with the amount of home runs. Every time you thought the game was over and someone was the hero, there was another hero.
Yeah.
And then the whole game started great, too. Let's not forget about this, with the legendary Vin Scully.
With the legendary Vin Scully.
Walking out, narrating his walk to the mound and his thought process on the mound before throwing out the first pitch, which he didn't do, but it was just incredible. I love it. Now I love him. 89 years old.
He's 89 years old.
Sharpest tool in the shed.
And I would say, we should all be half as sharp at age 89. And I would say I was actually really pleased, because I know some people got together. They said, let's petition. Let's get him doing the broadcast. I actually really respect that Vin said, it's not about me. It's about the players.
Yes.
And even though Joe Buck, I think, was quoted as saying, I'll drive to his house and pick him up, which I don't think Joe actually would. Joe would send a car. but I think there's a concept there of, and we may still see it, but it won't be Vin Scully barging in going, hey, give me my moment. I was here for fit. He's not. He does not that type of person. Sometimes you see people in the media, you see them as a celebrity, and you're like, ooh, they seem so nice. And then you hear stories that they aren't. There's not a single bad word about Vin Scully that any ex-colleagues ever had, any ex-player, any ex-manager. He's never really wronged somebody in the broadcast world. And we know broadcasting, not everybody's going to like you. Everyone likes Vin Scully.
People hate us.
Well, I don't know about that.
Oh,
that's
okay.
We don't want them to be indifferent. Hate's better than indifference in our world now.
No, Vin Scully is just, he's just so humble and modest, and he's so darn good at his job. I especially someone who works late nights and always has the Dodgers game on, I miss his voice. I've missed his voice this season.
I bet you he's a fierce negotiator, though. See, I think those nice people get in a room to do their – I think they're only harsh about their contract, because you really don't think they're like, hey, whatever you want to give me to keep broadcasting is fine with me. I just love being here. They're probably like, listen, this is what I want.
They lay out like five
different point form pages of – demands, and then you're like, you leave the room and you shake everybody's hand and you make them feel wonderful, but you get what you want at the end of the day.
He probably does it in the nicest possible way, though.
Yeah.
And that voice, you give him whatever he wants.
He does. There's very
what a
few
lovely man,
very
I assume.
Few people that have lasted as long, really never been forced out, come back or come back in a different role. Like, he moved with the team from Brooklyn, and that's way before I was born, way before you were born. And I don't know that you ever will see that again. I don't know. Like, we celebrate Bob Cole here in Canada, and he's in his early 80s. But Bob, I know how Leaf fans feel, but is a national broadcaster. So he doesn't always get to belong to one team. He's going to do he's done Stanley Cup final games with, with Carolina and Edmonton. He's done Stanley Cup final games with Calgary and Tampa Bay. And his job is sort of to call it's slightly to call it down the middle while maybe leading to the Canadian team. Vin Scully bleeds Dodger blue at the age of 89.
The thing with Vin Scully, too, if people aren't familiar with him, is it's the sport that he's broadcasting in, and the fact that he did it alone in the booth.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that he was able to tell these incredible stories in the middle of an at-bat. and then seamlessly still be able to call the at-bat. I mean, he's just... I think I'll have to go home and YouTube his best.
I noticed that on late afternoon Dodger games where when he was still doing it last year, when he would tell a story and you'd be like, it's amazing there's only one person in the booth, because it feels like you do have to have a conversation with yourself, but it doesn't drone on. It's not monotonous. Nope. And as we know, sometimes there's three people in the same booth at the same time for baseball, and I'm not sure it's a sport that needs three people. Sometimes I think other sports benefit from divergence of opinions. Baseball is about storytelling, it seems like to me.
And baseball, you can be quiet too. I mean, you don't need to be talking the entire game. And the thing with Vin's stories too is they were out of nowhere. You thought, where the heck is he getting this from? And he would always get them himself, and he would always go down batting practice, talk to the players, make his notes. He's just so good.
So what do you think that means? They brought in a new younger guy, Joe Davis, and he replaced him on Dodgers telecast, and he's 29 years old, which is incredible to me.
That is incredible.
It's amazing to work your way up like Joe did. But imagine also, like, it's one thing to replace person A, person B. They were gonna move somebody out anyway. You have to replace Vin Scully, and there's still only one of 30 jobs out there like it. It's really remarkable.
I think at least, though, if you're replacing Vin Scully, you know you don't have to – no one expects you to be Vin Scully or live up to that.
When someone replaces Carolyn Cameron someday.
yeah, I'm sure.
I mean, in 2047 –
Yeah, right.
it may be one of those things. We're going to talk to Rex Kalamian. This is, as we said, game two just ended between Dodgers Astros. But the Raptors also lose a game that they led late against Golden State. It's really tough with pro sports because you don't want to have moral victories. But you would have done the highlights last night. I was talking about it on the morning show this morning. There's in the absence of Jonas Valanciunas, and we forget he's only 24. He's almost 26 years old.
Mm-hmm.
They had a 23-year-old in Siakam. They had a 22-year-old in Jakob Poeltl.
They were so good.
Play very, very well. Like, you have expectations of what DeRozan is, Lowry is, Ibaka is, and they're all going to have good nights, great nights, good nights, indifferent nights, bad nights. It's 82 games, but the two kids kind of stepped in, Poeltl off the bench, Siakam in the starting lineup, and they were very good last night.
And not just offensively, they were really good guarding the Warriors until down the stretch. I mean, I know what you mean about moral victories, and that's where it's tough too, having this road trip at this time of the season. Is sure, it's a measuring stick, but I wouldn't really say it's a true measuring stick, because these teams, all the teams, are still trying to figure themselves out. It's not like the Warriors look like the Warriors late in last season. But yeah, I was really impressed with them on both ends of the court. And then it was kind of just the Warriors taking control. It was a 10-0 run to end the game.
Yeah.
Which is pretty disappointing.
Four more games, including the first Raptors matchup with Lonzo Ball Friday night.
Sorry, did I make this? Sorry. I need to clear my throat.
That's all right.
It's allergy
I felt that
season,
way.
I've been told.
Get a lozenge later in the broadcast. Portland, Denver, Utah are all the trips. The Raptors' next home game, ironically, against the Washington Wizards, and that'll be the same night Toronto FC plays their first playoff game against New York
sweet.
Red Bulls. So that's a nice night in Toronto.
Yeah.
I don't know if they can stagger it. I was talking to TFC PR people today, and they won't know the time of that game, but it could be one of those sweet doubleheaders, similar to, you know, Blue Jays playoff game, Leafs night game. I know there were some Blue Jays day games, Raptors night playoff games in the spring. Those
yep.
are kind of fun days.
Those are really fun
days
nights.
To be in the city, aren't
yeah.
they?
Yeah.
We're joined now by Rex Kalamian. He is in his third year as Raptors assistant coach, went with Scott Brooks and Oklahoma City to the NBA Finals in 2012, and a big part of the success there. Also other stops along the way, including now his hometown, where he's back in talking to us today from Los Angeles. Those were the Clippers, not the Lakers. Rex, great to have you on. Really appreciate you getting up early for us, which you are. You know, so many different opinions. Let's start with last night, and there was so much progress. There were so many good things. When you see a 22-year-old Pascal Siakam and a 23-year-old Jakob Poeltl play the way they did in that kind of stage against that kind of team, those are really big, big progressive moments, I think, for those two players, aren't they?
Absolutely. You know, I really thought that, you know, Jakob came in off the bench and played extremely well. He rebounded the ball very well. And obviously Pascal starting, he really attacked the game. The one thing I really like about our young players is that they're all competitors. You know, it doesn't matter who we put out there, whether it's DeLon Wright, OG, Jakob Poeltl, Fred VanVleet, they all compete. And there's no moment that's too big for them. And you saw that last night. In an early test, on the road against the best team in the league. Everybody kind of stepped up and played their best basketball. So it was we're very encouraged by how we're starting right now with our young players.
There's no easy time to have this Western road trip, but do you think there's something to be said for having it this early in the season?
Yeah, you know what? I really think it's a great opportunity for us. You know, it's an early test, and you rarely get tested like this with a 14-day, six-game trip so early. The one thing you could do is that teams sometimes to start the season don't have a rhythm yet. So hopefully, you know, on the road we could come out here and steal some games and play really well and kind of bond together as a team. We have to use it as a positive on our end. And you know what? The entire thing we want to do is get better every day so that we become better for April. We want to get better so that we're better in April and heading into the playoffs. And that's our goal. And we have to use this as a test. And, you know, it's we have to preserve energy. We have to figure out how to play without necessarily practicing every day because there's not a lot of practice time. So there's a lot of things going on when you go on the road for 14 days. But I look at it more as an opportunity and less of a negative.
Do you find that the shortened training camp this year has maybe made it a bit more difficult for you, especially in the training staff?
Well, definitely we haven't been able to put in everything we want to do in terms of schemes offensively and defensively. So a shorter 2 weeks, probably 10 days is what they cut it out. It would have been beneficial to have a little bit more time. But, you know, I think that players and coaches, everybody kind of gets a little antsy. Once you put all as much as you could put in, you want to get out there and you want to play. So I think at this point in time, you know, we're ready, we're prepared. You know, thankfully for us, we had a lot of summertime practice with a lot of our players. We had a good chunk of September to be able to work out individually with our players. So I feel comfortable where we're at right now, even with a shorter training camp.
I think the three ball is really interesting. You guys didn't shoot it well last night. I still think it'll get to the point where you're going to get more shots from C.J. Miles. We obviously saw that opening night against Chicago. Norm's going to shoot those balls. But guys are creatures of habit, right? And I feel like when you're 27, 28 in the league, when you're DeMar DeRozan, he didn't attempt any threes last night. You guys as coaches, you don't want to see him step too far out of what he's comfortable with. If it's there, you trust him to take it, but you know what he does best. He knows what he does best. I think there was too much, and I'll blame my colleagues in the media for thinking you guys are all of a sudden going to be blasting up 53s. That never was the concept. There were slight tweaks and changes to how much of a three-ball team you were going to be, but guys still have to be who they are, right?
Oh, no question, but having said that, we have to develop a mindset to shoot threes also. I think when you start shooting threes, the thing that gets lost in the interpretation is that you have to be outside the three-point line to shoot the three, obviously. So what it creates is more spacing. So if we're going to shoot more threes, we want step-in threes rather than off-the-dribble threes. So what it creates by being outside the line is it creates more space. The defense has to guard you a little bit closer, and it creates more angles to be able to drive. So I think you saw last night against Golden State, we were really – hitting the gaps, getting to the rim, either laying the ball up or kicking out to another three-point shooter. So I think with the mindset of going in and saying, listen, everybody has a green light to shoot a three-point shot, it kind of creates more space for other people to kind of play. And you're right, you know, we haven't hit the three ball like we want to, but we're putting a lot of work into it. Our guys worked all summer on it. And I'm really confident that the shots that we missed, even last night, we had standstill, wide open threes that didn't go down for us. A lot of these shots we're going to make. And I feel comfortable with it. I think that it's helping our offense. We're putting up a lot of points. And it's probably a better way to play in today's NBA is adding the three-point shot to the game.
So, Rex, because of how you played when you were growing up, and you very, you know, pro-guard, you like to shoot. When you see this kind of basketball now, even if when you're sitting scouting in advance or watching a game, I watched Saturday night you guys play. It was a comfortable win. But there's 68 threes jacked up. And if I told you 15 years ago, we were sitting in 2002 and took a time machine 15 years ahead, and I said, this is what the game will be now, would you go, gee, I don't know if I love that quite as much as still having some under the basket play, still, you know, having hard guys go to the rim and go to the free throw line. Do you like it as a spectator, even when you watch games that your team isn't involved in? Or do you say we got to adapt because it's jacked up to where it is right now, where, yeah, 35 and 40 is now the norm on a lot of nights for teams?
It is, and you know, I love it, to be honest with you. I love to see the three go up. I, you know, it's when you're making threes, it really puts pressure on the other team to have to come down and score. And, you know, you don't need to make a high percentage of threes, believe it or not. I mean, the way that it equals out, you need to take them is what you need to do. You really need to get them up. You need to be confident in them. We took 34 last night, and I don't feel like it was even enough. I think we should be able to get to 40 every game. We need to have confidence in the three ball, and we need to rely on it because that's the way the game is played today. And you know, putting pressure on the other team by shooting the three and spacing out there is huge. And I personally love it. When I played, that's all I could do, so I stayed out there and shot. So I love to see a teams come out. Even on my night off, you know, I'll watch certain teams that space real well and shoot the three ball and kind of see how they're getting their threes. We love corner threes also. It's the best shot in basketball. It's worth 3 points. It's the closest, and typically it's a catch-and-shoot opportunity. So we try to seek out corner threes if we could get them.
Are you going to try and use JV, do you think, a little bit more too in trying to open up the floor and dishing it into him and then creating some more space on the perimeter?
Well, JV is such a great screener and roller for us. And he commands a lot of attention. So anytime he's rolling to the basket, if you don't put another player on him or you don't come over to help from the weak side once he's rolling to the basket, then, you know, we have lobs. We have, and even with Lucas, we have lob opportunities and we have drop-off passes. So that's where our paint points are going to come from. When JV rolls, he plays really big in the lane, and we like that. You know, he also opens up opportunities for kick-out threes for us. So, you know, the way we start our offense is that we try to start with screen and roll, and all of a sudden let the ball start to really do the work and move the basketball. And the ball, typically, if you move it, it'll find the open player and it'll find the best shot available. Where we get stagnant is when we dribble too much. You know, when we put the ball on the floor and we get too much isolation basketball, we're trying to stay away from that type of basketball. We want more pick and roll, more movement, more body and ball movement. And that's more or less the philosophy of how we want to play offensively.
So I bet you're kind of fascinated. Staples Center, it's home for you. You started in that arena with the Clippers. And when you were starting with the Clippers, a few years in, the Lakers were really in their prime. Shaq's in his prime. Kobe's in his prime. I bet you it feels a little different tomorrow because they're building towards something, aren't they, with Luke Walton? They're building something with Lonzo on the floor. They're building something with Jordan Clarkson. The last few years, has it felt different without an older Kobe Bryant or, like I said, those glory days for them at the early part of the century?
Yeah, no question. When I was with the Clippers is when the Lakers were really rolling and winning championships, and it was a difficult time for us because the Lakers just really overshadowed everybody. You know, they were the team in Los Angeles, and I was with the Clippers for almost 10 years, and it was a difficult time, but, you know, they had a really good team, and now to see them, you know, there's no more Shaq, no more Kobe, Phil Jackson. You know, they've obviously changed the team up. They have a lot of new, young players, and they're trying to find their way a little bit. You know, I've watched some film on them. I watched last night's game against Washington briefly, and they're kind of similar to our young players where they compete. And they're going to, you know, Brandon Ingram and Ball and Pope, they have a lot of good, young talent that's going to play hard. And, you know, the NBA is not very forgiving. If you don't come ready to play, any team could get beat anywhere, and especially on the road. You really have to be locked in and ready to play everybody. You know, you can't play the schedule. You just have to play the team in front of you and get ready and prepare each and every night. And the Lakers could beat anybody. They have that type of talent. So we're going to have to be ready come tomorrow night.
So you're there so long, and, you know, Toronto's got their Drake courtside. I always feel like the Clippers get a short shaft when it comes to celebrity fans, right? We see McEnroe and Sampras and all these fans at Lakers game. Billy Crystal, when I'm growing up, it's like, oh, Billy Crystal's the only celebrity Clippers fan. That's not true, although Bill Simmons goes to games. So, like, give me some names you go, hey, listen, I'd stand up and say we still had some pretty good star power when we were doing well, right?
We didn't, no.
Will call tickets. There wasn't a long will call line, is what you're saying, for a few years.
There wasn't, unfortunately. All the stars, you know, they all went to the Laker game, and we didn't get much other than Billy Crystal. But you know what? That's okay. We're not in it for the stars, right? We're in it to play basketball and to win basketball games. But yeah, it was and still is a Laker town. They're a little upset this morning here because the Dodger lost in the World Series last night in extra innings. So the town is a little shaken up right now, but I'm a Dodger fan through and through also.
I remember coming in doing the morning show when you guys were in the final in OKC against Miami, and you pound them the first game. And you must look back on this too, and I'm sure the players, it's a cautionary tale for never being sure how long something will last. That's sports, that's life, because I look at that team, right, and you do too probably with James and Russ and Kevin Durant, and now you're reunited with Serge, and I love watching Reggie Jackson play then for you guys who went on to the Pistons, and you're thinking, man, this is the start of something, and then it just takes one thing, right? It takes, well, the owner's not going to re-sign this guy, and this guy wants to move, and this happens, or an injury, and it's really fleeting. Like, and if I told you 3 years ago when you came to Toronto, Paul George and Carmelo will be playing in OKC in a couple years, you never believe that stuff, right?
Right. Well, that NBA Finals against the Miami Heat was 2012. And I really only think about that maybe once a day.
yeah, I get it.
We had an opportunity there to really, we were Golden State, I think, before Golden State. We had that collection of talent on that team. But like you said, you know, year to year with free agency, with trades, with the way the league is today, there's a lot of movement and teams could get better quickly. And some teams could get depleted. excuse me. I really think that team had a tremendous amount of potential. They were really good. They were still good. Even when I left, I thought we were still. And look, they went to the Western Conference Finals again. The Western Conference Finals that had a chance to beat Golden State the year after I left there. But that was a fun team to coach. All those players were very young at the time. They were all kind of learning at the same time. Like you said, Kevin, Russell, Westbrook, James Harden, Serge Ibaka, Reggie Jackson, Kendrick Perkins, a young Nick Collison. It was a really tight-knit team and a lot of fun to be around. I have a lot of fond memories of that team. And you know, we had a lot of winning. There was a lot of winning that went on during those years. And you know, our best year was getting to the NBA Finals, and we won that first game, and then we lost four straight after that. But I have a lot of good memories when I look back on the things we accomplished there.
What do you think of all this movement, though, that we're now seeing in the off season, and as some people in the media call it, teams trying to build?
I believe in consistency. I think that's the only thing that wins in the NBA, and that's consistency within yourself as a player coming in, doing the same thing every day, building your habits. And consistency within organizations, I think, is important also. And you see with winning organizations, successful organizations, they maintain, you know, consistency within sometimes, whether it's the roster, the coaching staff, the how they do things. And that's what our team has done, really. If you look at our team and you say, you know, the kind of the core of the team with, you know, Kyle and DeMar and Jonas Valanciunas, and now we add a Serge Ibaka to the team, there's a level of consistency that Masai and Dwayne Casey have brought to our team that helps win, you know, and helps sustain success. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to build it, enhance it, and sustain it. And, you know, you add young players, you add draft picks, you add free agents, and you try to build on what you're doing. So I believe more in consistency. I know there's a lot of movement, and there are a lot of people trying to get together and build these teams and move on. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. You know, it's hard to always know how people are going to gel and how players are going to play together. You know, you never know until you put the team together. But like I said, I think we have a good core of veterans and a great young group of players up and coming that are sitting right behind our veterans, and they're providing a lot of energy and a lot of speed, and just I really enjoyed watching them play right now.
So your third year in Toronto, you seem to love the city. The fans seem to love you. Dwayne and Masai seem to think the world of you. But you mentioned the NBA Finals, and I'd ask about being a head coach. There's 30 jobs like it. You've done an interview before with Houston. Is it, I mean, I don't want you to say you think about that once a day, but you're focused, you're dialed in, you're like I said, you're loving what you're doing. But like I said, you know, the NBA Finals, lots of guys win NBA rings, but there's only 30 jobs on the planet similar to NBA head coach at one point in time. Will it be something someday that you say, you know, I do think it's coming. I think that day is going to come if I keep my head down, keep grinding, keep working hard.
Well, yes. I mean, I would like to think that one day I'll have an opportunity to be a head coach. I've been an NBA assistant now for 20-plus years and been a lead assistant now in Oklahoma City, now here in Toronto, and I would love the opportunity. But, you know, like you said, there's very limited jobs available, and you really you can't – for me personally, I can't look that far ahead. I really need to stay in the moment what I'm doing here, and my singular goal is to have success here, because when you have success somewhere, everybody benefits from it. And my main thoughts every day are about coming to work and trying to get our team better and help build our organization. And if that works and I'm afforded the opportunity to get an interview somewhere, then great. And you know, good things come to, you know, teams and organizations that win basketball games. And that's what we're trying to do here. But hopefully, you know, one day I'll have that opportunity.
You mentioned your Dodgers fandom. We're counting on a where were you moment for the Kirk Gibson home run. I'm doing the math here. You're in college, right? You're playing ball. It's probably the time of your life. You're probably broke like we all are in college. Do you remember the Gibson-Eckersley home run Saturday night? You must know where you were, yeah?
I remember it like it was last night. I certainly do. 1988, October 15th, I was sitting in my living room with my brother. We had a little apartment right outside of Los Angeles, and we were talking about how we were going to pay the rent for the next month, and we were watching the game with a couple friends, and it was an amazing, amazing day. And for me, it was an amazing day because personally something else happened for me that day. And it just really a very vivid memory. But it was amazing when Kirk Gibson hit that home run. And for people that don't remember it, it's always worth YouTubing that moment and watching the entire, I think it's like a 7-minute segment, 7-minute at bat that Kirk Gibson had, because it was an amazing at bat and moment in really sports history, I think.
So I grew up in London, Ontario, down the road, and I'm a Tigers fan growing up. My dad took me to Tiger Stadium when I was 4. So Kirk hits a home run off Goose Gossage in 84 that kind of clinches that World Series. And then I see him do that with the Dodgers. And I'm glad he was able to share it with another. Now, the Tigers haven't won another World Series since, and this might be the Dodgers' year. Yeah, right. But Kirk Gibson was able to do that for two iconic franchises in a 4-year span.
Well,
that's pretty remarkable.
The personal thing that happened to me that day was that my father was a huge Kirk Gibson and Dodger fan, and he actually passed away that day. And it was really a bittersweet moment, but it was a day that obviously I'll never forget. And since you're talking about fathers, you know, that was for me a very, you know, emotional day, but it was kind of like it was almost like my father was there with us mm-hmm. when that home run was hit. And earlier in the day, he passed away, and it was just a very emotional day. It's a day I'll probably never forget in my life.
Great having Rex on. And I find it interesting what he said too about with the Lakers coming up, how he thinks that the Lakers have enough talent to beat anyone in the league.
On a given night, yeah.
I know. I think they've played better this year already than, I mean, I thought they would.
Yeah.
And as hard a time as we've given Ball, especially after his opener, he's been quite good defensively.
Yeah.
He's got to clean up some things. And
good win against Washington. They beat Phoenix in Phoenix. Phoenix is terrible. They've got
right.
this whole Eric Bledsoe mess to take care of, and they've lost their other two games. But, yeah, I think most people feel they'll flirt with some relevant games, if you will, by March and April,
mm-hmm.
but playoffs might be another year away. And you know, we know this is like this in the NBA, and it certainly factors in way more though so than the NFL. I'd argue more when there isn't a Connor McDavid or Austin Matthews waiting for you, like say last year's draft. It's you can make a more immediate impact right away with just one player in the NBA, obviously, than any other sport. That's why we complain about players sitting out. I mean, I get it if Edmonton were to come to a city once a year and Connor McDavid sits out and doesn't feel like a very hockey thing to do, to rest if you're playing 3 and 4 games. But it's such I wish more people understood the grind of the travel, especially in the NBA. Like people just assume, well, they're away from home, but it's the getting off, getting on planes. It's the switching to time zones. It's the checking into hotels. There's more 3 a.m., 4 a.m. check into hotels and then, what, go shoot around. This is why a lot of coaches don't like shoot around anymore.
Yeah,
and a lot of
which makes sense to me.
And a lot of NHL coaches don't even like the morning skate.
No, conserve your energy.
Yeah. Do something healthy. Get some fresh air. That's what it is now, as opposed to, like, we're testing you. It seemed like with hockey, they'd almost, and maybe the NBA too, they'd almost test you to see if you behaved yourself the night before by needing to see you somewhere at 10:30 ready to do something athletically. And I just think athletes, they'll go have their fun on the road, but they'll be out late and they'll see friends, they'll see family, they'll do whatever. But they're too smart now to really, you'll know longer term if they're screwing up and not paying attention to all those details.
Just look at Vegas's home record. I mean, that's a perfect indication.
We were saying that the other morning. I blew that so out of proportion and said,
oh, really?
anyone thinking this will be a thing is wrong and you can go have a good time anywhere.
Coincidence?
But it's the teams, yes.
I think
7-1 and pounding teams and Chicago. Nick Kiprios told me Chicago went in 2 days ahead of time.
Oh, that's no good.
So, yeah, you're not sitting there for 8 hours. You're basically sitting there for 32, 34 waiting for the game to start going, let's go walk around. Next thing you know, it's 3 a.m.
Yeah.
What can you do?
Get in a casino. Don't know what time it is.
Are you a gambler per se?
No. Only time I've gambled, I think I told you this, is at Dave and Buster's.
As
a child.
That's not. See,
I've never been to a casino.
For my.
Not on purpose. I mean, it just hasn't happened. I don't.
We're looking for fundraising ideas for my wife, Rachel, says, come up with some better fundraising ideas for our kids' rep soccer team than we had last year. Not that the ideas were bad, but I'm like, what about a Vegas night? What I don't understand if you're raising funds is, are people actually going there hoping to take some of that hard-earned fundraise? Like, are they going, I'm going to spend 10 bucks here, and I'm going home with 40 of your money. That kid won't have a jersey or a backpack. Because I'm gonna split aces here and go on a blackjack run. I don't know the answer to that.
Have you come up with new ideas?
Well, that's my idea, but I don't
that
know.
Is, okay.
And
well,
I don't want the kids gambling.
Just keep, I see a lot of red flags.
There's a lot of red flags. Yeah. 9-year-olds learning how to count cards is not necessarily something. I mean, they're going to get into a lot of trouble over the next 5-6 years anyway.
Right, but you don't need to be the one who led them down that path.
I do not. we've got other stories to wrap with.
What up with that?
That's happening right
now.
Cue
the music. Do you want to start?
Well, I have one. I have a hallway thing I just thought of here.
Okay.
We walk around Rogers, different floors. There's like, you need, if you drive here, you got to go into like 4 elevators before you can actually get to your job.
Oh, it's Fort Knox.
So, but what I'm noticing, this new trend in our building, and I'm sure we'll hear from people on Twitter if it's not exclusive to our building. You know how people kind of walk with their phones and they don't pay attention?
Yeah.
What I notice about our building more and more, people are working on their laptops while walking.
What?
I am almost crashed into
that
radio cafe about 50 feet where we are, walking. There's a bridge where you kind of are on an incline.
Yeah. They're doing it down that across the bridge?
And
that's narrow.
Do you ever do the walk in our building? Do you ever do the walking thing at somebody where it's not aggressive, but you're like, I'm counting on you to move. You're paying no attention to me.
That's one of my pet peeves.
Because otherwise,
if you're in my lane, get out of my lane.
Otherwise, I'm gonna be like Scott Stevens, ex-Devils defenseman, and you're gonna get blown up here in a minute. And your laptop now, like, it'd be one thing to drop your phone. There's edges to a laptop. There's a lot of glass.
But that's dumb for them.
That's dumb for them.
I mean, I'm clumsy, so I would never do that because I would definitely drop my laptop.
But I'm surprised you don't see it as much
no,
as I do.
No, but I'm in so late. People aren't around when
I know.
I'm in.
There's
no,
a hustle
no
and
one
bustle.
Who works on a laptop is in when I'm in.
There's
it's all us.
It's Night Owl, vampire types. It's all the, no offense, none taken. But it's all the hustle and bustle 9-to-5ers that are like, if I don't bring my laptop here on this, you know, 40-second walk to get a muffin, I'm going to miss out on something.
I just find it anyway so bizarre coming in here during the day and seeing all the people that work here. I know that sounds silly. It's like I'm socially inept now.
Well,
I don't know.
Well, you can imagine getting here at 5:15 in the morning and going, where did all the people come from? What's 10 o'clock hits?
Yeah.
Like, where did they...
And they all meet for lunch. I mean, it's all just very normal things that in our line of work you just don't experience.
No, you and I don't. I'm heading to sleep and you're just waking up. Lunch dates are not really a big thing
No.
in my world or your world, more than likely. What else?
Speaking of work, actually, and you emailed this story. I saw it too. So you know how you have the communal fridges at work? And people sometimes take things. I don't know if people did it on purpose. Someone recently stole my bag of carrots. And I'm going to call it a theft because they were mine.
Were they cut carrots already? They were
no,
freshly
they were
washed.
Bagged, they so you wouldn't even...
Baby carrots?
Yeah, baby carrots.
Okay, not big, long, like right
no.
out of the dirt
but
carrots.
But the most common thing that's stolen from office refrigerators is milk.
I'd never have guessed that.
I would have because people put it in their coffee. Or tea.
Yeah, but don't most weird. Fridges you walk in, no matter when the last time a fridge was cleaned, I feel like there's always a bag of creamers there. And that's meant to satiate the coffee drinkers who don't drink it black into not stealing other people's milk. Plus, milk is tricky with expiry dates.
Yeah.
I assume with a bottled water or a can of Coke, those are more likely to get, or orange juice even, they're more likely to get, repelled away than... milk, which you don't, and everyone likes different types of milk. Like, I don't know if you're
a skim milk,
a whole, yeah. a 2%, a 4%. So I think there's all these different milk brands.
Goat.
I'm very suspicious of milk in other people's fridges. I've had that since I was a little kid.
Same, but I think the idea in terms of stealing someone else's milk is they're not going to know if you take a little bit from their carton, right? If they have right?
They're not.
Where if you steal someone's Coke, that is, you're just taking that from them. I'm not saying either's good. I don't steal people's food. Well, I do eat a lot of people's food at work.
I felt like there was a butt coming. Okay.
You can ask my coworkers. If
it's
they
shared
have a snack.
On purpose?
No, if they have a snack, I'll be like, oh, that looks good. And then they'll give me some. I eat a lot of people's food.
That's a big
But at least they know.
Well, that ends up being a big camp thing. You go away to camp and you got 8 other people in your cabin and you're like, he's not going to miss those 2 cans of Diet Pepsi. And I need a fix.
This is where it all starts.
Well, have you ever had. I'm on this milk kick now, thinking about it. Have you ever had powdered milk?
Camping, I have.
Yeah, and that's like, I understand.
You're on a powdered milk kick?
Well, no, this sounds, I just in thinking about it, because I don't want to end up sounding like too privileged to have had it, but I haven't never given it to my kids, but my mom would do that. We'd run out of milk, and she'd be like, all right, I'll mix up some powdered milk, and it's gross compared to what you buy. It's not the same. It's like a mere shred of the taste quality.
Yes.
And there's little fragments in it.
But we make do, you know?
We make do. The other thing about the fridge thing I was thinking is now and then you get a really snippy note. And it's always an anonymous note.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like...
on a post-it.
Carolyn from Sportsnet Central signs it at the bottom. Hey, let's start taking care of each other's food properly. This is for all of us. And we need to share and be more considerate of others. But there's always somebody that types it up in a giant Dan Gilbert Cavaliers type, goodbye LeBron type font. And they leave it on the fridge.
Oh, yeah.
Or the
very
sink.
Very passive-aggressive.
There's the sink on the third floor. It's like, wash your dishes.
I've seen it in the ladies' washroom before, too.
Plus, there's always, I find this demeaning, mom's not here for you to clean up. And I'm like, I clean up?
Yeah.
It's not mom. It's not 1973.
That's where you
clean up.
That's where you should leave a response and say, I don't appreciate these sexist Word document notes left on the fridge.
I feel like I wouldn't get much sympathy in that context.
I just find work fridges pretty gross to begin with. They smell. There's a lot
they
of stuff
smell.
In there.
Yeah, I'm really caught. So your baby carrots will need new homes in the future. Bring your own little cooler. You could have a cooler or write a note. There's a, you and I talk about TV a fair bit, and I don't like a lot of Redux stuff with movies and TV. Like when the Footloose movie came out 2 years ago, and I was like, no, Kevin Bacon's Footloose. And there's a Karate Kid show that's meant to be a sequel to the original 1984 film. There were like 4 Karate Kids. 2-time Oscar winner Hilary Swank was the Karate Kid.
I don't think I've seen
Replacing Ralph Macchio.
Yeah, I have not seen Karate Kid.
I'd really like you to watch the 1984 original.
Okay.
I really would.
Sure.
I can't recommend enough. But so Ralph Macchio, who's kept a really youthful appearance.
Yeah.
Like he's like
he probably drinks
50,
a lot of powdered milk.
A lot of powdered milk. I don't exaggerate. I feel like he looks 31 and he's 50.
Do you have a picture?
Yeah, yeah. You want to? That does that look like about a 54-year-old man on the left?
On the left?
Yes.
No way.
That's what I'm telling you.
He's not 54.
He's old. Well, he made the Karate Kid's 33 years
His
old.
His hair
he
cannot be naturally that dark. I'm just calling that.
He's
for
made.
What it is.
It's not even like a. He's 55. Okay, there he is now. See, he's maintained a Rob Lowe.
Okay, there he looks a bit. Yeah, but no, he could easily. I would put him at 38,
at max, right? Like
yeah.
More. Yeah. Okay. So they're making a Karate Kid sequel with him and his arch rival. There's a kid Johnny who is the biggest jerk in the final Karate Kid tournament,
okay.
and they both have moved on to other things. And I wanted to point out that this was something I will. Check out and watch. I know I remember bragging to you when we first started doing the podcast about how into the new Twin Peaks I was going to be.
Yeah,
and I'm only four episodes in after like 38 weeks. I've got to go. I want to go back to it, but it really
did
lose
me. That's
not
how you binge watched. You're doing it wrong.
It really did lose me with how weird it was. I'll put it that way.
So people were talking around the office about Halloween's obviously coming up, and I saw...
Do you have to dress up in character on TV, by the way?
No. You know what?
That
I've
would concern
always,
me greatly.
I've always had fun doing that. I got to do that when I worked in Vancouver and just did the morning show, but now since Carly and I do the 1 a.m. and it is the morning show, one day it won't be Halloween the other... But
so you'll be seen as not trendy enough because you're doing it a day too late?
Yes, so we won't
November
be doing
1st.
It. One thing I think we'll do for our breakfast television update, which I did with Seaball once, was just one of us be the invisible man. So you just have them off screen.
Oh, they're off screen.
Right? But they're still talking.
Are things moving in the air?
No,
like, no
but they're still
not.
Talking doing the... Anyway, but other than work, I really don't enjoy Halloween that much. I like the candy. But I don't like... I have a Halloween party on Saturday that I just don't care to... figure out a costume
A lot of people bail on Halloween parties. Are you planning on, is there any specific direction the costume goes? Anything in the
some
news?
Some of my girlfriends
anything that's
have
sort
come
of
up
timely?
With it. I'm just, not really. I think my issue is procrastination. It's not Halloween. It's that I just...
It's a lot of people's least favorite
Maybe
holidays.
I should think of something
Some today. People hate New Year's. Some people hate Valentine's.
I don't hate it. I just... don't need it.
I
like it for kids. It's so cute.
It's great for kids. It's great. And at a certain age, I think my children will tune out of it. So I'm enjoying it while I can. But it also, there is that buying candy thing. And oftentimes we have bought far too much candy and it's left over. And I'm like, I don't need to eat 22 small size coffee crisps tomorrow. I wreck yourself at the gym and then, you know, eat 24 Mars bars.
Well, and the issue with all those small ones is I would totally eat 10 to 15 of those, but if I had a full-size chocolate bar,
Bingo.
I wouldn't eat three or four of those because that's disgusting.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
That's right.
It makes no sense.
It's a
and then on the flip side, though, I would never eat five little bags of Doritos, but I would totally eat a whole full bag of Doritos.
I never thought of it that way. Yeah, you'd look
right?
like a glutton if you had five
small
Doritos bags on a couch.
But the full bag, I mean...
What else are you going to do? Pour it in a bowl? That's,
no.
You can't,
who does that?
Dump them out in a bowl? Way too
Anyway, maybe I should see
that.
Someone about all this.
I'm not sure that it's time yet, but that day may be... For eating purposes alone...
Right.
That day may be coming. I'm just saying you don't want to be left. You can't run out of candy because you can't start giving out like soup, like those little microwave soup things.
No, you also can't buy the candy too early because that's when I would eat it.
That's the problem.
But you can't leave it too late because then the candy will be gone.
And they're on special on November 1st. I want to point that out.
See, I can't do that.
You can get Snickers and Mars and a lot of stuff really inexpensively.
That's when
on
I start
November
buying
1st.
My Christmas things. So.
The lights and the stocking stuffers.
Yeah.
We're glad Rex Kalamian was on, exactly, from the Toronto Raptors assistant coach from his home in Los Angeles. And we're glad people were with us. We're in this new studio again, we hope.
Oh, right. I'll take a picture.
But people should review the sound as much as the content, because I don't know if we're going to sound. I've heard reviews of this studio. It's tinny. One mic's louder than the other, which may be true for part of the podcast
that might have
that
been
you just
something
heard.
That we did, but...
It may have been.
Everything's fine.
It may have been. Rate us on iTunes, of course. Tell us what you think, and we'll be back next week with a far more professionally sounding affair for you on Point Taken.
See ya.
You've been listening to Point Taken with Carolyn Cameron and Greg Brady on sportsnet.ca/590.